Hey, this is Whitey from the Ale Evangelist Show, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hello?
Podcast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Allman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
The president's press secretary said this is a local matter. No, this is not a local matter. They've been killing young black men all over the country. And we are here to say that we're going to stand with Stephon Clark and the leaders of his family. We are putting aside our differences. It's time for preachers to come out the pulpit. It's time for politicians to come out the office. It's time for us to go down and stop this madness.
From the PAC Northwest studio of the Podcast 99 Network, located in beautiful downtown Silverdale, Washington, this is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show podcast. Now, here is your host, the submarine qualified, well-coffeed, rules-driven, elitist history buff, Dave Bowman.
Weapons gone, you have permission to fire.
Have permission to fire, con weapons out.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are and whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause. Thought about life, thought about the laws of gravity, police shootings, why nothing changes after them, Chinese tariffs, North Korean concerts, veterans issues, and humanity. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Regardless of which side you're on, does it seem like anything has changed when it comes to accountability over police shootings? Yes or no? China has retaliated, and guess what? It's going to hurt. Kim Jong-un deeply moved by Southern performers, but does that mean anything? Here's how you get a hold of me. Text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. Email Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, and your preferred web browser. E lo qui conizio, the enemy, greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Well, it's 90-degree day here at the... Not outside. Outside, it's like 50-ish. But it's sunny now. Who knows what it'll be in an hour. Yesterday it was sunny, then it was dark, then it was windy, then it was rainy, then it was hailing. I told my dad, I said, if locusts show up, I'm out of here. But it's not that. 90-degree day is, we've been here now for 7 months, and we got a bunch of, you know, I mean, it's like any house, right? When you first move in, you just kind of throw things where they fit and where you think they're going to be, and then you think to yourself, well, later on, we'll fix it. Well, it's fixing time is upon us. So we have been rearranging furniture for the last day and a half. And today it's in here. I got to rotate everything in here 90 degrees. It's just, it's not, I mean, I love my desk. I love the studio. I love the room. I love all of that stuff. It's just not the optimum performing ability. For example, the background right now, if you're watching on video, not the optimal background, as you can probably guess. But at the same time, it's work. I got to disconnect everything. The whole studio has to come apart, rotate 90 degrees, literally not moving in distance. It's just rotating 90 degrees against the wall over there on my left. And then I got to put it all back together again. So not looking forward to that. Ben has the day off. Seems like he hasn't gone to school forever. It's spring break. Last week it was conferences. This week it's spring break. Still not going to school. And baseball has started. So I guess all is right with the world when you get to that point with it. And there you have it. So the shooting of an unarmed black man in Sacramento recently has left a lot of questions. And again, I don't really, whichever side of this issue you're on is fine with me. If you're the police are shooting black men indiscriminately, that's your opinion. I don't happen to agree with it, but that's your opinion and you're entitled to it. If you're on the position that, well, the police did nothing wrong, I don't agree with you either. But that's your opinion and you're entitled to it. Somewhere in the middle of all this is the reality of the problem. what that problem is the real problem. We've got to get to that problem. Now, I am of the opinion that that problem is a lack of accountability. I get in trouble every time I get into this discussion. People will send me emails. They will send me texts. They will tell me that I'm an idiot, that I don't know what I'm talking about, blah, 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 blah. Fine. Get your own show and say what you want to say. I don't care. I'll give you a show on Podcast 99 if you really want one. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. You do have to do the work. I'm not going to do it for you, but the issue becomes one of accountability. I believe that we have a problem with the concept and the practicing of policing in the United States of America, not the police officers themselves, although there are some problem children. We would be naive and we would be foolish not to acknowledge the fact that there are, unfortunately, too many officers who either A, don't understand the Constitution, or B, don't care. I can say that because I sit here every week reading the circuit court rulings. And every week, every single week of the year, there are at least 2 to 3 cases around the country where some police officer somewhere either A, didn't know what the Constitution said about somebody's First, Fourth, Fifth Amendment rights, or B, didn't care. One or the other. And so that officer did something that was any first-year Constitution student, any person that's actually read the Constitution would go, why the hell would he do that? Was it the heat of the moment? Was it anger? Was it stupidity? Was it lack of knowledge? Who knows? And in many cases, that becomes the crux of the issue, is why did the officer do this foolish thing? Why did the officer do this illegal, unconstitutional thing? Is the officer covered by qualified immunity? Would a reasonable person have done this? All those things come into play. But at the end of the day, you know, as we've said so many times, just get a freaking warrant. How hard is it? I was reading Tom Clancy's book this week, and they were talking about an FBI investigation, and the FBI wanted to go get a search warrant, and they knew which judges to go to because they know which judges will sign off on it. I don't believe for a minute that your local police department doesn't know that too. How hard is it to follow the procedures? And yet, time after time after time, we see this happening. So there clearly is a problem. What that problem is, however, is certainly debatable. Is it racism? There are people who certainly believe that white cops shoot black people indiscriminately without consideration of anything else, and it's just white racism in action. I'm not one of those people that believe that, but the counter to that would be, well, of course you don't believe it, Dave. You're white. You're probably one of them. Well, I'm not a police officer, and I've never shot anybody, so I'm pretty sure I'm not. But I'm willing to acknowledge the possibility that there is an element of that there. Has it been proven? No. Is it a possibility? Well, if we're going to look at what the problems are, don't we have to consider that at least? Is it administrative? Are police officers by nature too violent? Are they too prone to go to the gun to start with? That certainly has entered the argument in Sacramento here, hasn't it? If you have watched the video, and I have too, it strikes many people as hasty, that the decision to fire was made far too quickly. Now, police officers will argue, you weren't there, it's the heat of the moment, here's a guy holding a cell phone, it could be a gun, it's dark, we don't know. Again, I'm willing to accept that argument, I'm willing to have that debate, but there are some things on that video that cause me, as a person trained in deadly force as a nuclear weapons security guard, to question whether or not the decision to make that decision to fire was hasty. Were other means not available? Because that's the first rule of deadly force. It has to be the last resort, period. If it isn't the last resort, it's not authorized. Be that as it may, is that part of the problem? Is part of the problem any of the other things that could be in here? Is there Is there a tendency? Is there a statistical reality that African Americans commit more violent crimes than white Americans or other races of Americans? And therefore, police officers profiling tend to believe that of a black suspect more than a white suspect. Who knows what all of this stuff is? But for all of this, it comes down to me to a lack of accountability. It comes down to the fact that nothing ever changes. And the reason nothing ever changes is why this continues to happen. Ben, you know, if he misbehaves and I don't correct it, what happens? His behavior continues in the same manner. If I myself am allowed to do things that are inappropriate and no one ever corrects me, what becomes of my behavior? That becomes an arm. Nobody would argue, seriously, I don't think anybody would argue, that there is an element of environmentalism here wherein an environment that allows certain behaviors to continue, rightfully or wrongfully, but particularly wrongfully, if those behaviors are allowed to continue and not corrected, then they're going to continue to happen. If there's no consequences, why would anything ever change? What consequences have there been? Occasionally, on occasion, South Carolina is a good example. We see an officer who is clearly, I mean, the video evidence is so overwhelming, is charged with murder, convicted, and sentenced. But for the vast majority of these shootings, what happens? Bueller? Anybody? Can you think of any of these cases where the officer is specifically held accountable for his or her actions? Even in the case of Ferguson, even in the case of the officer in Ferguson, yeah, he lost his job, but ultimately what happened? Now, again, the forensics and everything showed that he was not responsible. The investigation of the case showed that he wasn't responsible, but from the word go, there was an attempt to essentially string this guy up. They wanted his blood. Well, that's incorrect, too. That's not the way our system works as well. The evidence should have spoken for itself, but there are people who still don't believe the evidence. Oh, that couldn't have happened. Michael Brown was a gentle giant. He would never have done such a thing. Well, is that the case? Moreover, in the city of Ferguson, what has happened since then? What has happened in the state of Missouri since the Ferguson shooting with regards to policing? In regards to how the police interact with suspects. Anybody? Anybody know? Would you have expected, as a reasonable person, would you have watched what happened in Ferguson and expected there to be changes made, at least operationally? Hey, don't approach a suspect by yourself. Make sure, anything along those lines. Would that have been a reasonable expectation? And yet none of those things happened. Why not? What has happened in California? Well, what's going to happen in Sacramento? Do you actually think anything is going to change because of this shooting? At the end of the day, several police officers fired over 20 shots to kill a man who was holding a cell phone in the dark. I admit that. I stipulate that he was in the dark. He was not following directions. However, there could have been reasons for why he wasn't following directions. And again, I go back to my training, which is last resort, period. No shots had been fired. No indications that there were shots going to be fired. Was deadly force authorized? What's going to happen here, do you think? After an investigation is probably going to show, an official investigation is probably going to show that the young man was holding a phone, we know this already, and he was shot at least 6 times in the back. Why? We're still going to be asking the question why, and we're still going to be faced with, well, the cops are racist, we're going to still be faced with, it's a regional problem, we're still going to be faced with, no, it's a nationwide problem, the police are overwhelming, all of these things, and nothing's going to change at all. And the reason nothing's going to change is because of accountability. There is no clear accountability here for what's going on. There's no process by which a police officer involved in such an incident is clearly and, what's the word, transparently judged for his actions, his or her actions in the process. In fact, the laws of at least 15 states make it clear that that can't happen. You've probably heard of this. The Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. This was a law that was passed many years ago, actually. It's become one of those things where people, they hear it. Do they actually know what it actually is? That becomes, you know, part of the whole question. Well, in theory, here's what it does. It except when on duty or acting in official capacity, LEOs have the right to engage in political office activity or run for elective office. So in other words, unlike the military, and I will tell you, this is one of my pet peeves, is when police officers call me a civilian. No, you're a civilian too, because if you were military, you would not have this right. Sorry, you cannot engage in political activity or run for elective office when not acting in your time. Law officers shall, if disciplinary action is expected, be notified of the investigation, the nature of the alleged violation, and be notified of the outcome of the investigation and recommendation made to superiors by the investigators. Now, on the surface of it, that seems reasonable, doesn't it? But do you have the same right? Do you as a citizen have the same right to, if some sort of action, legal action, is going to be taken against you, to be notified of that? Or can the district attorney take his case to a grand jury without you ever knowing about it, without you ever being there, without you having any exculpatory evidence on your behalf presented, and gain an indictment against you and proceed to prosecute you before you ever know anything about it? Questioning of a law enforcement officer should be conducted for a reasonable length of time, and preferably when the officer is on duty. Again, do you have that right? Questioning of law enforcement should take place at the offices of those conducting the investigation or at a place where the officer reports to work. Do you have that right? Or do you have to go downtown? Law enforcement officers will be questioned by a single investigator, and he or she shall be informed of the name, rank, command of the officer conducting investigation. Do you have that right? If you're arrested, do you face just one investigator? Do you face one questioner? Or can the police haul in a bunch more? Law enforcement officers are entitled to a hearing with notification in advance of the date, access to transcripts, other relevant documents and evidence generated by the hearing, to representation of counsel, and other non-attorney representation, i.e. union. Law enforcement shall have the opportunity to comment in writing on any adverse materials, and they cannot be subject to retaliation for the exercise of any of these rights. Now, all of this on the surface of it seems to, okay, what we're trying to prevent here is ramriding of police officers for carrying out their duties, correct? I mean, that's what it seems like. Numerous states have enacted these laws. Among those states, California, Delaware, Florida, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland, Minnesota, Nevada, New Mexico, Rhode Island, Virginia, so forth and so on. Problems come in the fact that the devil's always in the details of these things. Unlike a member of the public, the officer gets a cooling off period before he has to answer any questions. You get into trouble, you got to go downtown to answer questions right now. The officer doesn't have to do that. The officer is to be interrogated at a reasonable hour with a union member present. Unlike the member of the public, the officer can only be questioned by one person. We already talked about that. Reasonable periods, which shall be timed to allow for personal necessities and rest periods. You get arrested, they can question you basically for as long as they want until they have to charge you. Or until you decide you're not going to talk anymore. Unlike a member of the public, the officer under investigation cannot be threatened with disciplinary action at any point during his interrogation. If he's threatened with punishment, whatever he says following the threat cannot be used against him. Whatever happens after the interrogation varies from state to state, but under nearly every LAO Bill of Rights, the following privileges are also granted. Departments cannot publicly acknowledge that the officer is under investigation. If the officer is cleared of any wrongdoing or the charges are dropped, the department may not publicly acknowledge that the investigation even took place or reveal the nature of the complaint. Officer cannot be investigated or questioned by non-government agents, which means no civilian review boards. That's in the law, folks. You can't have a civilian review board review or interview a police officer because it's in the law that you can't do it. If the officer gets suspended, he must continue to receive full pay and benefits until his case is resolved. And in most cases, the charging department, your police department, has to pay for his legal defense as well. Now, these are all benefits that, on one hand, might make sense, but you can start to see where they would put a drag on the transparency of what's going on here. If the whole thing is designed then to really avoid public accountability of what's going on. And because of that, because the accountability is no longer transparent, it's hard to see what's going on because it's hard to understand what's going on. Why wouldn't people conclude then that something is being covered up? Why wouldn't people look at this and go, well, this keeps happening. There's no accountability and the police don't seem to care. To which their response, of course, is, well, we're just following the law. We're just following the procedures. We're just following these systems. Well, who the hell put these systems in place? You could say, well, okay, the legislatures passed these laws. And you would be correct. The legislatures did, in fact, pass those laws. The same legislatures that are now standing out there on the front porches of capitals around the country going, this cannot continue to happen. We must put a stop. We must investigate. We must get to the bottom of this, knowing full well that they passed laws that say they can't. So why did they pass them? That's a good question, isn't it? Why did they pass those laws? Because police unions, law enforcement unions, put a whole lot of money in their pockets for re-election campaigns saying, hey, we really want this law. And if you want our support, if you want our endorsement for your next office and our money, we'd love to be able to say you support law enforcement. Really, folks, isn't saying I support constitutional rights of my citizens the same thing as saying I support law enforcement? But no, it's not. Because we have a fundamental disconnect with how we use police forces, not police officers, although, again, there are some really bad examples out there of some people who don't get it. But the overall use of our police force is as the pointy end of the stick, the gun of government. And, of course, we're told on a regular basis now, you don't need a gun. The government's there to protect you. The police are there to protect you. But how do you look at this if you're an African-American and go, what the hell are you talking about? On the one hand, I got people telling me that they want states' rights and they want to do it with 14th and 15th Amendments. And on the other half, I've got people telling me that I don't need to defend myself. I don't have a right to defend myself because the police will do it. But the police, without any accountability, are shooting people left and right. And we're all up in arms, and we're all tied up, and we're all angry about it. We all say, well, you're wrong. Well, no, you're wrong. Well, you're wrong. And none of us want to look at the real problem, which is that legislators took money to pass laws to prevent transparency. And we're told that if we don't support those laws, it's because we don't support law enforcement. Right? We don't support law enforcement. You're against law enforcement. No, I'm not. I'm actually for the enforcement of laws, regardless of who they are applied to. Or whom, I guess, would be more correct. If the laws don't apply to everyone equally, then they're not the laws. They're not right. And if the police unions are getting away with this Bill of Rights thing, which is causing transparency to disappear, We're not even talking about whether or not these officers were justified or not. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about the process by which we determine that is not transparent. Why wouldn't people conclude that there's something being hidden? I certainly wonder if there is or not. Again, I was a military police officer. I had a military police badge. Yes, it was 30 years ago. I was trained as a nuclear weapons security guard. I am trained in the use of deadly force. I still have it memorized in my head. I can still type it in my sleep because I typed it so many times. I was the weapons department yeoman. I typed the 8120 manual, which no longer exists, at least 100 times. The rules are clear. It has to be a last resort. It cannot be your first reaction. You can't look at something and go, gun, Now, police are going to argue differently. Police are going to tell me, Dave, you're not there. You don't understand, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I get it. Let's have a transparent system by which we review this. Instead of hiding the police officers behind a bunch of rules that don't apply to me, don't apply to you, don't apply to the victim, and then determine whether or not it was rationalized or not, rational or not. But we won't do that. Why? Because money talks and everything else walks. That's the problem. It's easy to say one way or the other, well, these police officers were racist, these police officers were wrong, these police officers were right, whichever. But we should all be concerned with the fact that these police officers are being granted legal rights by our legislators who raise their right hand, swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. They are granting rules and laws and rights to people that you do not have, and that they are using those rights and laws to obscure what should be obvious, which should be open, which should make everybody handle this a whole lot easier. But instead, we're not. Instead, we're allowing money and the false, I support law enforcement nonsense to obscure how we're doing this. And at the end of the day, when everything is said and done, we won't know any more about why Stephon Clark was shot. Other than he was holding a cell phone. He was holding a cell phone in the dark. And that is why he's dead. Is that a good enough reason for you? And we won't know any more about the police who are involved than we know today. Nothing is going to change that. Until we start changing legislative rules doesn't mean I don't support law enforcement. I do. We're not going to get there, are we? It's the Dave Bowman Show, plausibly live, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You want to join me, text machine, 209-565-DAVE, 565-3283. Email Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show. Stay with us, back right after this.
Smile for me, I give you everything. You're the cutest thing that I have ever seen.
This is Betty White. I know you don't need one more thing to worry about, but listen. High blood pressure can cause kidney damage, blindness, heart attack, stroke. And you can have high blood pressure even if you feel all right. 1 in 7 adults has it, but it's easy to get your blood pressure checked, and you can treat it if it is too high. So don't worry about it. Don't ignore it. Just see your doctor and check it out.
For your free booklet, visit the Will Rogers Institute at wrinstitute.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson has been a White House physician all the way back to the administration of George W. Bush, but most people hadn't seen or heard of him until this January when he stood before the White House press corps and announced the results of President Trump's first physical.
All clinical data indicates that the president is currently very healthy and that he will remain so for the duration of his presidency. I told the president that if he had a healthier diet over the last 20 years, he might live to be 200 years old. I don't know.
But Jackson's lack of policy experience has left many veterans groups questioning his nomination as VA secretary. Will Fisher of the left-leaning political action committee Vote Vets wonders if Jackson's glowing portrayal of the president's health got him the job.
I think that Donald Trump was enamored by having Ronnie Jackson go out and say something like that before the press corps. And it was at that moment that Ronnie Jackson probably became Donald Trump's new VA secretary.
A native Texan, Jackson joined the active duty Navy in 1995 after finishing medical school at the University of Texas Medical Branch. He went on to graduate from the Navy's Undersea Medical Officer Program and specialized in resuscitating troops in Iraq. But Fisher suspects that his nomination may be part of a larger push to privatize the VA.
There is a coordinated effort being led by Donald Trump and others to destroy and privatize our VA healthcare system.
Other veterans groups are taking more of a wait-and-see attitude and asking a lot of questions. Verna Jones is the executive director of the American Legion.
I'll tell you that I think we're surprised. He just seemed to have come out of nowhere.
The VA is one of the largest healthcare systems in the world, with a budget of almost $200 billion and around 350,000 employees. Jones says Jackson will have a lot on his plate and that the American Legion will try to support him.
When you think about this, there are 23 million veterans in the U.S., and 9 million of them are enrolled in the VA, and then 2 million receiving in-facility care. So, you know, the new secretary is going to have to come in and manage all of that.
He would also have to take over the agency at a tumultuous time. President Trump ousted Secretary David Shulkin after about 13 months on the job. Shulkin this week called the Washington environment toxic, chaotic, disrespectful, and subversive. Richard Delgado of the San Antonio Coalition for Veterans and Families says Jackson's military experience is appealing and could help him get a handle on the VA.
With him being an admiral, that also shows to his leadership style, and it shows the type of person that he is. You don't make admiral just nilly-willy.
Outside San Antonio's Audie Murphy Memorial VA Hospital, Army veteran Melissa Cervantes was caught off guard by news that the VA would be getting a different leader.
I felt like Shulkin had more experience because he was there. That's what scares me. Like, how is he going to run VA?
Cervantes says she worries that the change will affect quality of care for her and her husband, who's also a veteran.
Because everyone, you know, has different plans, agendas, so you never know what the new person coming in is going to do, even if they care about veterans or not.
A White House official told CNN that Jackson will resign his commission and retire from active duty if he's confirmed as VA secretary. In the interim, Robert Wilkie, Under Secretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, will be the...
What's up, Whitey?
Hey, Scotsman.
We're from the Ale Evangelist Show, and you are listening...
to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back. This is I, Dave. On a Monday, a 90-degree Monday, everything's being rotated 90 degrees. I also changed my monitor, so I'm having trouble seeing. I don't know if you talked a whole lot about that. I've been having some major eye problems lately. So I have an HD TV, and I thought, well, I have an HD monitor. It's a small one, you know, 13-inch. But so I hooked up my TV. So that's what I'm looking at now, and I can actually see it. Not sure I like it. Not sure it's going to work. But nevertheless, it is there. So... We'll see how this whole plays out. Go from there. China has retaliated on tariffs. Not only did their space station crash last night, as expected, I did note that for the past, 2 weeks, I guess, the discussion of the space station was, we don't know exactly when it's going to land, plus or minus 3 days, plus or minus 3 hours, plus or minus 7 weeks, seven plus or minus this. I saw a story yesterday about a solar flare. We thought maybe the solar flare would affect this, but it didn't. And so now we're surprised because it didn't. Anyway, when the thing crashed, China, which we call Red China, issued a press release that said, quote, that it had impacted precisely when they had predicted that it would. So they got it right all along. See how that works? Anyway, China has announced that they are retaliating with tariffs. After saying they weren't going to, remember when Trump initially issued his tariffs, China had said, we're not going to play his game. But now they have announced retaliatory tariffs on 128 products that are manufactured or originate in the United States. These are, quote, in order to safeguard China's interest and balance the losses caused by the United States' additional tariffs, that according to their statement. The highest tariffs, 25%, imposed on top of already existing duties, will be applied to scrap aluminum and various kinds of frozen pork. Did you know that? I mean, pork, you know, American pork is the number three import into China. It's the third highest thing that they import into China. It's American. So in theory, I guess you could say that it's going to affect their consumer. However, because they don't work on the free market that we do, how much of an effect that's going to have on the little people is debatable, isn't it? They're also putting this on scrap aluminum. And they have cracked down, I don't know if you knew this or not, but they have seriously cracked down on their importation of American, well, recyclable trash. Recyclables like cardboard, rags, that sort of thing. There are businesses in Seattle, I was reading this past week, there are businesses in Seattle that are seriously hurting right now because they have been for years shipping trash, cardboard, aluminum, rags to China and making money to that. Now China is saying, not only are we going to crack down on how much of this we're going to take, but now we're going to put tariffs on top of it. And these companies are in panic mode right now because their margins were pretty small to begin with, and now they're going to be even less if they even have a margin, if they can even go on there. The highest additional tariffs will also be posed. An additional 15% tariff applied to dozens of U.S. food products, including fresh and dried fruits, nuts, and wine of various kinds, specifically sparkling wines, i.e. champagne, and various kinds of rolled steel bars. So the steel that we are importing and turning into rolled bars and sending back, they're going to put a tariff on that. Now, it was interesting because I spent 20 years in the Central Valley of California. What's the number one export in California, folks? Anybody remember? Dun, 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 dun. We were told this all the time because I lived in Modesto and Manteca, San Joaquin, Stanislaus County, and we were always told, hey, almonds. Almonds are it. Did you know that almonds are number six on the actual exports from California last year? They're actually number six. They're not even in the top five. Number one, and I didn't know this, number one, civilian aircraft engines and parts. Apparently California makes a lot of engines. Well, is that on the tariff list? Didn't see it. Number two, machines for manufacturing semiconductor devices. So we're always complaining that the Chinese are making electronic devices cheaper than we can make them, but we're sending the machines to make them from California. That's number two. Number three, diamonds. Non-industrial. Diamonds are the number three export from California. Number four, by the way, this comes from the Census, Department of the Census. Number four, machinery for repairing, converting, transportation, that sort of thing. Number five is electronic integrated circuits, which makes sense, Silicon Valley. Number six, then, is almonds. Number six is before we even get to almonds. Now, where the benefit of that is that's up 90%. The amount of exports from California for almonds is up 90% over the last 2 years. Motor vehicles with only electric engines is number seven. Parts and accessories for something called ADP machinery is number eight. Number nine. Dun, dun, dun. The number nine export from California is petroleum oil. And number 10, medical, surgical, dental equipment. And then you can go on down. You don't actually get to, let's see, we actually export gold. 18 is pistachios. Spacecraft and suborbital space launch vehicles is number 22, believe it or not. Ferrous waste and scrap iron is number 25. Well, if again, we're told that, by the way, Canada, or from California, the stuff going from California, Mexico number one, Canada number two, China is number three for exports from California. The problem is, of course, I live now in Washington, where our exports are fruits, things like that, which, of course, is going to affect things here. So you've got, we've already talked about the scrap aluminum, the scrap paper, and that sort of stuff. But now you've got fruit, apples, fresh and dried, bananas, pineapples, pomegranates, mangoes, grapefruits, grapes, watermelon, cherries come from Washington, and, of course, the nuts from California. And all this stuff is going to be subjected to now a 15% tariff on top of the import fees that we already have, which means that these goods are going to lose value as far as profit value goes, importing them to China. And unless you can find another market to make up for that, that isn't going to retaliate with Trump's tariffs, well, what do we got here? Anybody? Bueller? It's called a trade war. So what's the response now? If the whole purpose of our tariffs in the first place was, quote, to protect the national security interests of the United States, that's what the president said. That was his words, not mine. Trying to protect the national interest of the United States. How is that going to work now? With China retaliating, with China placing tariffs on products that, if you think about it in a strategic sense, are very important to a couple of states that are not particularly friendly to Donald Trump. California, you could argue, hates Donald Trump so much that they actually seriously talked about secession. Of course, that ended very quickly on because it's nonsensical. California says things like, well, we got the eighth largest economy in the world. We could do it. We don't need the United States, which is complete and total BS. California, without the United States, would fall like a flan in a cupboard. It really would. It can't function. And, you know, keep in mind, there's another element here that people don't want to talk about. And I don't want to get into the whole state of Jefferson thing here. But, you know, there's a lot of public land in California. Who owns that? Now, the quick answer is, well, the United States government owns that. No, the United States owns that. The people of the United States own that land. And that land, by the way, is full of resources like timber, gold, oil. Who knows what else is in there? Sure, it's nice, pristine forest now. But if California wants to go its own way, it's going to have to compensate the United States for that land, or it's going to have to give it up. Not going to happen. Anyway, completely tangential discussion there. Maybe one of these days we'll get back into the whole state of Jefferson thing and California leaving and who owns these public lands and blah, blah, blah. Point being that California is anti-Trump. And you could argue Washington State, at least the Seattle area is similar, very similar to San Francisco in its behavior. Not the entirety of the state, but certainly Seattle, Bainbridge Island are. So you have two states here that are basically hostile to the president's policies already. And who are these tariffs, these counter tariffs from China going to actually hurt? Now, China had said they were going to go after Trump supporters. And I, you know, to some degree, I think these things are going to, in some ways, you know, looking at these pipes, sparkling wine, ginseng. China has slapped a 15% tariff on the import of American ginseng. I didn't even know we made ginseng. Stainless steel alloy pipe used for petroleum or natural gas. So they're going to put all these things on and just going through this. Okay, pork, I can see where, you know, some of the Trump country is going to be hurt by that, especially with the 25%. But it looks to me, just looking at this, like California is going to be significantly impacted. The nut business, which is, of course, nuts in California. It's crazy nuts. It's nutty in California. It really is. It is going to be affected by this. And in Washington, your fruit exports are as well, which again, you know, farmers in California have sunk so much into nuts at the expense of all else, at the expense of diversity and all else, a collapse in the almond market would just about kill. Oh, wait a minute. Ding. So the state of California wants to get rid of farming anyway. The government of the state of California hates farming. So maybe they wouldn't object to a tariff on almonds and pistachios anyway. Now that I sit here and think about it, see how my mind works sometimes? Sometimes I can read this stuff all night long, and then in the middle of saying it, I realize, wait, the state of California is not going to mind that. The state of California isn't going to care. The state of California already says, farming's just, it's just like 2% of our GDP anyway, which based on this export list, you'd have to agree. I mean, you got to get down to number 6 before you even talk about nuts at all. And even at that, it's still only 1.9% of the overall share. So, maybe the state of California wouldn't be upset. It's that realization of that, wait a minute, maybe I've been looking at this all wrong. Perhaps the state of California will be just fine with the Chinese tariffs. Maybe they even talked them into it. Who knows? Who knows what Kim Jong-un was talking to them about when he was over there? Maybe he was talking to them about, you should put tariffs on this because then California can get rid of farming. And everybody knows that that's what California wants. California wants to get rid of farming. And we've had that discussion for years. It doesn't make sense. I know you're saying, why would they want to get rid of farming? Because it hurts the environment. Because it uses too much water. Because it makes too much dust. And because the land is too valuable for other things. Even though it's the best soil in the world for growing things. The state of California has made farming virtually impossible to do. I mean, it really has. It's bizarre. It's problematic. Speaking of bizarre and problematic, Kim Jong-un, the dear leader, apparently the dear leader. So I don't know if you know what's going on in North Korea right now. The South Koreans and the North Koreans are getting ready to have a big summit. Everybody's excited. Yay. We're finally going to have reasonable discussions. Now, again, I'm not on that bandwagon yet because nobody has yet explained to me how this is going to work. Reunification of Korea only works if one side or the other destroys the other. Because the Kim Jongs are not just going to go away. They're not going to give up power. They're not going to accept meekly the idea that we should just become citizens of a democracy. They're not going to do that. These are people who are used to, if somebody displeases them, standing them up in front of an anti-aircraft gun and blowing them to bits. And the South, while it can say it wants peace and while it can say it wants these things, the South isn't all that eager, I don't think, to say that peace is so worth it to us, peace so dear to us, as Patrick Henry would have said, that we're willing to live under a communist dictatorship. I just don't believe that. I follow a baseball team in Korea, the Hanwha Eagles, and I watch their games, and I can't understand a word they're saying because it's all in Korean, but I look at those people playing baseball in Korea, and I think to myself, are those the kind of people that are going to be willing to go, yes, I will live under a Kim Jong-un regime to guarantee that there's no war? Are they really going to do that? And I just don't believe it. Anyway, so in anticipation of this summit, in anticipation of this whole breakout of peace, the South Koreans have sent what they call K-pop groups to North Korea for a concert. Now, K-pop is something that, well, it's Korean pop music. That's what it is. And it's entertaining. I mean, it's interesting to watch for a few minutes. It's kind of weird by American standards, but it is entertaining. And they sent a group called Red Velvet, I guess, to Pyongyang, and they did a big performance last night this weekend for Kim Jong, in front of Kim Jong, who was said to be, quote, deeply moved by the performance of this K-pop group called Red Velvet. Deeply moved. by a cake pop performance. Now, I guess on the one hand, you could say, well, look, K-pop has made it into North Korea, and this is like Blue Jeans into the Soviet Union back in the 70s and 80s. It's a portend of things to come. Who knows? But I come back to, okay, great. What's going to come of this? Now, supposedly Kim Jong-un told the Chinese last week when he was down there drinking his $200,000, yes, that's correct, $200,000 bottle of Chinese liqueur that he wants to denuclearize and he wants to, you know, be a good kid and he wants to be the new kid on the block, if I can use that phrase talking about popular music, but he wants all that stuff. But really, is psychologically, is this the kind of guy that's going to be willing to give up the absolute power that he has over everything North Korea has, over everything North Korea is, in order to become what? Because there's no way in hell he gets elected. The population difference, I mean, if they had an open election and said the population difference in the South is going to, you know, they're going to elect somebody over him, there's no way they're going to vote for him. And if they round up all the people in the North and threaten to shoot him if they don't vote for him, well, what's going to be left? There's something here that's just bizarre to me, unless, and I'm kind of trying to analyze it in my head, unless he knows something nobody else knows. Unless he knows that his position is not as secure as the rest of the world believes it to be. But in that case, why did he go to China? Why did he get up and leave and go to Beijing with his wife, where they had a fancy state dinner, and they drank a $200,000 bottle of Chinese liqueur? It's often been said that the Kim Jongs like their booze, but $200,000 for a bottle? I think the most expensive bottle of anything I've ever had was some really good tequila once that cost about $100 for the bottle. I've had some tequila in the past that shots were $25 each, but man, that was good stuff. But $200,000 for a bottle? Wow. I don't know. I'm watching this happen and I'm not convinced that it means anything. I'm really not. There's a part of me, sure, that like everybody else, hopes for peace and hopes for a resolution of the Korean issue and the peninsula and reunification, much like we had for Germany back in the 70s and 60s. Remember that? We all wanted Germans reunited. We all wanted East and West Germany to be one Germany again. All of us in the West did. The Russians didn't quite see it the same way for obvious reasons. But then it turned out that the East Germans weren't all that excited about it either. The East German leadership understood that if they reunited with the Western part of the country, wasn't going to be on their terms. It wasn't, and unless there was a war and they beat West Germany, it wasn't going to be theirs. It was going to be a system that was inherently hostile to their style of leadership. And Kim Jong-un has to know that. And of course, what ended up happening? The people of East Germany kind of took over things. And if you've ever read the accounts of the day the wall came down, I mean, it's, you want to talk about deeply moving. Some sergeant on the guard duty misinterprets an order, misunderstood what he was told to do, and the whole wall comes down. Wow. That, the points on which history turns. I don't see that happening in North Korea. I just don't. I'd love for it to happen. I'd love for it, those guys standing out there with their arms like at the Panmunjom area. I'd love for them to go, you know what, that's it, we're done, and just turn around and walk off the job. But I'm afraid that under the current regime, they would be shot for that. People just start wandering back and forth across the border. That's not going to go well. But Kim Jong-un, deeply moved by the K-pop group Red Velvet. Okay, I'm willing to suspend disbelief and say maybe we're making progress here. But my gut instinct is I'm just not going to get all that excited about it quite yet, okay? I'd like to, but I'm not going to. Just because history tells me something different, and there you go. And that's really what it's going to boil down to, isn't it? Well, I'm just about out of time for a Monday. Sometimes my lips move faster than my brain, or my brain moves faster than my lips do sometimes. I wanted to touch on one thing really quick before we get out of here. If you follow the show on Facebook, or if you follow the show on plausiblylive.com, posted an article this weekend about Facebook and some of the issues that a lot of people, not just me, are having with Facebook. Facebook is trying to kill the model of people using social media to promote their own contents. Facebook wants to control the contents that's created. They want to control who's distributing that content and what actually gets distributed. To that end, they've changed their algorithms so that you don't see everything. And unless you specifically ask for it, you're not going to see it on Facebook, this show, or any of the Podcast 99 shows, or any show that you like. You're not going to see it unless you specifically ask for it. So we're asking people, please go into your Facebook settings on Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show, Facebook, and podcast99.org Facebook, and select See First as your option so that you always see it. And please go to the website, podcast99.org, plausiblylive.com, and click on that follow via email, enter a valid email address, and that way you'll always know, always get the word when there's a new show out, when something's happening, and you don't have to rely on Facebook to let you know. That would be a big help to us, all right? Got to get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. Please don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. I'm Dave Bowman, Plausibly Live. This is The Dave Bowman Show right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Plausibly Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Network. To contact Dave directly, call or text area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. For more information or to hear past shows, go to www.plausiblylive.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.